And with Father's Day just around this around the corner, many families will obviously be getting together to celebrate diverse styles of parenting in a couple of days. But what if your teenage son wants to drop out of high school and you let him on the condition that he watches 3 movies a week with you, movies that you select? Well, author David Gilmore and his son Jesse Gilmore tried it. David has turned their experience into his first memoir, The Film Club. It's published by 12. David and Jesse Gilmore join us now. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC. Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Hi there.
And just so I know, Jesse, how old are you now?
I'm 22 right now.
Okay, so we're not going to reveal the end of the story here, but obviously this happened a few years ago when you were a teenager. David, from the dad's perspective, where did you get the idea to strike this particular kind of deal with Jesse?
Well, I tried to help him with his schooling for 2 years, and because I'm a professor of literature myself, I just couldn't countenance the idea that it was humanly possible for someone to drop out of high school and not perish instantly. So I struggled for 2 years, but finally I couldn't stand looking at his suffering in high school any longer. I had been a film critic for 15 years, and I thought, for heaven's sakes, let's give the guy some pleasure. He's been suffering from boredom for years. Why don't we give him something he likes to do? So that's how we got to do movies, because that was the one thing that he still loved doing.
And Jesse, coming from such an educated dad, how did you get to the point that you wanted to drop out? Where was this, by the way? Where were you growing up?
I was in Toronto, Canada.
Uh-huh.
And how did I get to the point? There's something about high school. At that age for me, it was almost like it went against completely who I was. And I know a lot of kids dislike high school, you know, so I don't think I'm... It wasn't just an issue of that. It was an issue of... It was really kind of wrecking my life. It was making me dishonest. It was making my relationship with my family. The only thing we ever talked about was you know, my school and if I was doing badly. And it was just... It really wasn't working for me. So... When my dad came to me and said, you know, do you want to drop out of school? You know, I was very happy about it because it was a kind of a blight on my life at the time.
And so, David, did you set about going through a list of movies, and we'll talk about some of the specific ones in a minute, and saying, well, if he watches these 3 movies and those 3 movies and another 3 movies, that's going to provide a form of education?
Yeah, but, you know, life never works out like that at all, you know. First of all, you can never tell when a child's heart is open. You can never really tell what they're learning. You can talk to them a lot, but you're never really sure when the window's open and what's going through it. So I was making this up as I was going along. You know, I started with French art movies, assuming that he would go, oh, I see the light. But, you know... He's Jesse. He's not me. So his responses were horrifyingly unpredictable.
Right. And Jesse, what did you first think when you heard this particular deal offered by your father?
Well, you know, 2 things went through my head immediately, which was one was I was really happy and relieved that I didn't have to be in this situation anymore. But on the other hand, me and my dad, even in the hardest times through school, have always got along, have always had a really nice time together. So on one hand, I was worried that by institutionalizing our relationship, it might turn into school itself and therefore kind of be ruined. So I was, you know, on one hand, I was really happy and relieved. On the other hand, I was worried that this might affect us in a bad way.
Now, since your dad was a movie critic, did you grow up immersed in film in the first place?
Yeah, well, I think one of the reasons he picked films is because kind of we didn't, you know, we weren't really an athletic family. We weren't throwing the ball around in the backyard, you know, when I was 13. What we did together
that
we really enjoyed was watch movies. And the movies would kind of spawn into all kinds of things. You know, we'd watch these movies, and we'd go out on the porch, and we'd talk about them. And we'd start by talking about the movie, and then it would go into all kinds of things about, you know, your life when you're 16, about my friends and girls and stuff like that. So it kind of came out of that.
So the first movie you two watched together was François Truffaut. Did you want to say something, David?
No. I'm just laughing with
yes,
with amusement.
The autobiographical film 400 Blows, which maybe seems like less than a subtle choice when dealing with a troubled teen.
Well, you know, as I said, you know, I was making it up as I was going along. I meant well. I thought, well, you know, here's a film about a guy who's having trouble with school and trouble with his family, and he runs away, and there is this extraordinary moment at the very end where the camera looks at his face as he's gallivanting along the beach, and the expression on his face is not one of ecstasy, but one of puzzlement, because he's asking himself, well, now that I'm free, now what am I going to do with this freedom? So you can imagine, metaphorically, I thought, oh, I'll show this to Jesse and we'll have a great conversation. He'll go back to school the next day. But you know, it didn't work out that way at all. He hated the film.
Yeah. Still going back. You wouldn't show 400 Blows to your own teenager someday, Jesse?
You know, the thing about what happens with, especially with European art films, is, like, you know, right now I like 400 Blows and I like Fellini and stuff like that. But when you're 16, especially my generation, we grew up on a whole different kind of medium of entertainment. You know, we weren't watching those films. Is a real language you have to learn, because they're completely at their own pace and you have to give yourself completely into the movie. And when I was 16, 17, I was just, you know, they bored me, as they would bore most. But, you know, as I watched more and more, you grow an appreciation for them, and you learn how to watch them. You can't watch them like a modern Hollywood movie. You have to watch them in a completely different mind state.
All right, you know what? Let's have some fun with this. Listeners, if you had to show your child three films, now this was three films a week that they did, but let's say any three films that you think your kids, I don't care if they're 2 weeks old, that you want them to be exposed to someday, what three films? What would be at the top of your list? This is a little different than the usual Desert Island list, right? This is not your... right? What are your three films that children, or let's say once they become teenagers, should watch? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for film critic, author David Gilmore and his son Jesse Gilmore. The memoir is called The Film Club, and if you're just joining us, David allowed Jesse to drop out of high school for a year a number of years ago, as long as he watched three films a week with him of David's choosing. Oh, look at those lines. So I don't even have to say, no, now I'll say don't call 212-433-WNYC because everybody has an opinion. So you followed
well,
up. Go ahead.
That's a good point you're making right there, that everyone does have an opinion. And so by watching movies with Jesse, it's a guaranteed conversation maker. You know, young boys are not necessarily that forthcoming, although Jesse was really chatty. But the wonderful thing about movies is you throw a rock over your shoulder in the street and somebody will want to talk to you about their favorite movie. So it really is quite the trampoline for conversation.
So you followed up 400 Blows with Basic Instinct.
Yes.
What was the motivation for that choice?
Well, the truth is that I wanted the guy to have some pleasure in his life. He'd been bored in school for years. I saw that during 400 Blows, he was getting that same glazed expression. I thought, okay, we're going to watch more European art movies, but let's give the guy some dessert. And also, let's teach him at an early age that there's a certain pleasure to be had in enjoying yourself at a terrible movie. And Basic Instinct is a prurient, sort of disgusting movie. And at the same time, it's very compelling and quite pleasurable to watch. So it was both dessert and it was edification. It was don't be a film weenie. Learn how to enjoy a bad film.
And do you remember your 16-year-old reaction to Basic Instinct?
I was absolutely in love with Basic Instinct the first time I saw it, and I still am.
Good
you know,
for you.
It is a really almost morally wrong movie, but it's a blast. You know, those movies are, you can't enjoy movies and just say, oh, I only like, you know, Kurosawa and black and white German films from 1940. You know, you have to, if you really love movies, you love even junk, and junk can be just, you know, even though it's very hollow, it's pleasurable, you know, and they're fun to watch.
Al in Stewart Manor, what are your three?
My three. You just mentioned one, Truffaut's 400 Blows. Second, Easy Rider, 1969, with Peter
Wonderful.
Fonda.
Wonderful. Yes.
The third one, I had a tough choice. I've seen hundreds, thousands of films. I would put in 1974, perhaps it was 1976, Truffaut's Small Change.
Yes,
about the
L'Argent de Poche.
Beautiful, beautiful, wonderful
yeah.
film.
So
those
absolutely, exquisite
Truffaut.
Film.
Now, I don't know, Small Change is also a coming-of-age film?
No, it's about children, just how children behave and uh-huh. interact with one another and how they love and how they just... how they relate to one another. It's just for, well, I guess to teach adults and adolescents as well how children interact.
Yeah. All right. David,
and
you want
Truffaut
to...
Truffaut has a great touch with children. He's one of the few directors that actually has them behaving like human beings, and he doesn't ever direct them to behave cutely like children. And he also put his daughter in that film, too. She's a very striking young blonde girl in it. No, that's a delicious list.
Nina in Manhattan has a very very different list. Hi, Nina.
This is a crazy question. Okay, so the first would be The Searchers, of course. That's like a non-question, of course. The second would be Star Wars. The first would be Searchers because it's a morality tale and I think sort of subtly tells an important story that would be impressive upon a young spirit. Star Wars, of course, because it would teach people to dream. And then the third was a toss-up. This is a crazy toss-up between Avalon, which is Barry Levinson's film, because that really is my family history and it's so beautifully told, and Citizen Kane. But I think I'm leaning towards Avalon.
Nina, thank you very much. David, did you include Star Wars?
No, I didn't. I didn't. And by the way, you know, Jesse's, you know, when I ran Citizen Kane by Jesse, his response was, as usual, unpredictable.
Which
and,
was?
And, you know, Citizen Kane is you know, it's a very impressive movie. On all the film lists, it ranks number one. I still, you know, it is a really nice movie. I still don't think it in my opinion, has a spot up there as number one. I think maybe, you know, the top 20, but it's, you know, it's rated over The Godfather, enough said, and, you know, I don't think anything is better than The Godfather.
Some of the ones that are on your list that you went through during this year, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Plan 9 from Outer Space, there's a contrast, Annie Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Blue Velvet, that's a little steamy for a teenager, right?
Sorry, which one?
Blue Velvet.
Oh, Blue Velvet is just, but, you know, David Lynch, he out of all his movies, that's the best one, and it touches on something, he just nailed it with that movie. It touches on something really dark and really interesting, and something that was never done before that, and something that still really hasn't been recreated.
Which
and,
is
and
what?
Hopper's performance in that, with anyone who's seen the movie with the gas mask, is unbelievable.
So, what's the dark, I mean, I know it's a dark film, but what you want to go to that place? What is that darkness that struck you?
Well, as I said, Dennis Hopper with the gas mask, he touches on kind of some kind of primal insanity in people with his movies. He did it a small bit in another movie called Mulholland Drive, but he does it in this, and it's completely original in the psychosis of human beings, of just how insane human beings can get.
I think that's true. Movies portray madness a lot, but there is something about the portrayal of madness in this movie that makes you physically nervous, the way being around real mental illness, real violent, yeah, potentially explosive mental illness, where there's something almost obscene and bottomless about it. Jesse's an interesting point, and he made that point when we watched it, that there was something there that almost no other movie has ever actually hinted at, because you can't say what it is. You can only imply its presence.
And you can only get there by brushing by it. Like, you can write a scene of a crazy guy talking insanity, but to get those real profound primordial moments, the director always kind of has to even stumble on them. You know, I don't even think he can try to write it and do it. It has to kind of come out of, as the thing comes out, come out of nowhere.
David, did you want this to be a didactic experience, or was it just about spending time with your son?
Not really. Essentially, school had killed literature for him, and I'm not blaming the teachers. He had really gifted teachers. I spent a lot of time in his high schools, and you know, to blame teachers for problems like Jesse's is really irresponsible, because his teachers were really young and really gifted and really imaginative. They just had a kid on their hands who was really healthy and who didn't happen to want to be in school. It was their dilemma as much as mine. No, what I didn't want to do was I believe I'm an old-fashioned romantic. I believe that being close to something beautiful is good for your soul, although the payoff may not be the same day. It may be 10 years down the road. Most of all, I wanted to spend time with him because I thought, this kid is going to be okay. He really is. If he has a happy childhood, he's going to go on to have a happy life. So let's try to give him some happiness in his adolescence, you know, so he doesn't end up in a building with a sniper's rifle when he's 24.
Yeah, but then, did you make it a kind of watch and discuss well, almost homeschool classroom experience?
I couldn't help myself, you know, because he's my son and because I wanted him to get the most out of these things. And so, yes, I there were little lessons that were in some of the films, whether it was the problem of accepted classics like Citizen Kane or the virtue of stillness when you watch an actor like Steve McQueen and his exquisite acting in Bullet, but also, you know, stillness is a metaphor for life, which is, you know, I know you're a teenager, but don't go running around like a pooch after things for your whole life, because sometimes there's nothing down the block, just another dog barking, and don't spend your life going down the street to bark at it.
How about the movie Showgirls? What was that a metaphor for?
I can answer
Jesse,
that.
Jesse can take that one.
Showgirls is in the exact same school as Basic Instinct, which was, it's Showgirls is probably the worst movie, one of the worst movies ever made, and so fun, and you can't stop watching it when you put it on. I think anyone who says they're not entertained by Showgirls is lying, and I'll stick to that.
Emily,
you know, bad taste at that level is breathtakingly interesting.
Depends if you see it in an ironic way or not, right? Emily in Manhattan.
Absolutely.
Emily in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'm just really intrigued by the story because I didn't really go to high school my entire, the years that I should have been in high school. And so I just find the story really interesting. And I guess what I especially like about it is that that the movies gave a form to Jesse's education, I guess. And it seems to me like that, and I also like the father, David, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your focus on his pleasure or happiness, because that to me seems like the basis of what like a real education is about in the first place. And what is it that can't really happen in a school because you can't really follow each kid's, you know, particular pleasure or interest.
Yeah.
And it isn't really the fault of the teachers. It's just, you know, sort of a side effect of the way things are structured. And so, I guess I was just really excited to hear about that, and I was wondering if and how, I'm assuming it did, but how it sort of went on to shape Jesse's education.
Well, here's the line here, and I know this sounds like a line, but it's really not. I'm going to film school next year in Prague, and that is honest to God the truth. And I made that decision about a year and a half ago. I started writing movies, and I want to go to film school. And I went back to get my high school equivalency, and I went to university for a year. But what I really want to do is make movies. So, you know, in a almost cheesy way, but it's absolutely true, it did completely shape my educational life.
What are you going to do for a living, though?
Well, that's what I'm out here in Vancouver working 10 hours a day saving money for.
Emily, thank you. And from Emily in Manhattan, we go to Emily in Ossining. Emily, you have three movies?
Well, the one that came to me first is 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yes. With
Henry
Fonda.
Film. I saw it when I was about 12 or 13.
About the jurors.
The jurors in the jury room. And one juror basically, you know, has a huge impact on all the rest of them who are ready to convict. Anyway, people should see it. It's a great film. There are so many other films. I was looking through my computer of the films I've seen at the Jacob Burns up here, and I think it would be good to see An Unreasonable Man about Ralph Nader. It's not the greatest film in the world, but it just sort of, it's really informative about a person who's had a huge impact and who's, you know, about whom there's a lot not known. A lot of young people don't know a lot about what he did in the past and what his, you know, basically I came away from seeing that film thinking it's, he's on the same campaign that he's always been on, which is consumer.
All right. What's your third movie?
I don't have a third movie. There's so many.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Actually, you told
something,
my script.
Something about a culture totally other than our own.
A culture totally other than your own. Yeah. Did you use it? I mean, kind of use it as global studies at all, David, and try to pick films that would expose Jesse to other cultures?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But once again, you know, you never know. You never know what's going in and what's not. So you show him a film like, as I said, 400 Blows. He doesn't like it. Then I showed him Kurosawa's Ren, which is, of course, about, you know, feudal Japan in the 16th century, expecting him to pass out from boredom. The next thing I know, the guy is riveted to the movie, more riveted than I am, and has this extraordinary experience of cinema, which I would have never predicted. And that's the thing, I guess, that you learn with children, which is you never know when the magic moments are coming. You know, you can arrange for the expensive trip to Paris, but it may well be the trip to the milk store where you have the most profound conversation you're going to have that summer. So you just never know.
Joni in Westchester, what are your three films?
Hey, I really admire The Dad for taking his kid out of school, because all I would want to do is get him back into school as fast as possible. And Rich Singler, you know, directly spoke to that. But in a more broad sense, Groundhog Day is like a must-see, especially for disaffected teenagers, you know. So they don't have to walk around grumpy all day, like poor Bill Murray did. Being there, I think, is fantastic, because
it can give
a teenager, you know, that whole idea that the world doesn't really always see you the way you are. And that's, I think, useful as they go out into the world. And I was trying to think of the word that spoke to family values, and your other caller nailed it with Avalon.
Thank you. Thank you. Good list. Jesse, can you answer this question for yourself? If you someday, and you're 22 now, someday have a teenager of your own, what three movies would you most like him or her to start with?
Streetcar Named Desire. Because it's Marlon Brando's performance in it is, you know, it created method acting, Marlon Brando, and basically that performance. And it's just such an amazing, pleasurable performance to watch, and so interesting, you know, all the stuff he did that actors before him didn't do, you know, the scratching and the moving around, and just how real he was on camera, and just to show how great acting can be when it's done, you know, done properly and done amazingly. I'd show them Streetcar Named Desire. Probably number two is Godfather 1 or 2, just because all around, you know, cinematography, acting, writing, I just think it's both of them, 1 and 2, are flawless movies. And I can't think of a third one right now, but those two, absolutely.
David, just listening to the two of you here, definitely listening to Jesse, you must be really proud.
I'm delighted. You know, I can't tell you. I'm so glad you said that, because Jesse and I are not in the same room. He's in Vancouver right now, and I'm in Toronto. And listening to him, I don't want to embarrass him here, but I just thought, what a cool guy. And, you know, I said, I thought he was going to be okay, and I never would have done this if I'd had a kid who had a behavior problem or a drinking problem or a drug problem. But I always had this feeling about Jesse that he was just fine. He just happened to hate school, and if we stayed out of his way, he was going to be just fine.
The book is called Film School.
Film Club.
Oh, Film Club. What am I talking about? The Film Club, right? The Film Club, published by 12. It is one of the 12 books that they are publishing this year. David and Jesse Gilmore, it has been such a pleasure to talk to the two of you, and judging from our listeners, a real inspiration to a lot of people. Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.